Chapter 24. Archbishop Cranmer was with Lord Hertford when we arrived at Lambeth Palace. We were sent in, though again Barrack had to wait outside. The Archbishop looked dog-tired. He was unshaven, black stubble covering his sallow cheeks. Lord Hertford stood by his side. The Archbishop waved to us to sit.
"So, there has been another,"
Hertford said. I saw he looked afraid. "Yes, my lord," Harsnett replied. He told the story of what had happened at the church. Cranmer sat silent a moment, then said, "Poor creature. I pray that after his terrible sufferings, he is now in heaven." He turned to Hertford. "Each killing is more spectacular than the last. If this goes on, the whole affair can't fail to become public."
"Can it be kept quiet?"
Hertford asked. His tone was sharp, his expression intent. He seemed more in control than Cranmer.
"I have spoken to Yarrington's congregation," Harsnett said, "sworn them to silence. I've left Reverend Meaphan in charge there. I'll go back when I leave here, have the body removed, and make the point once more that if Yarrington's killing becomes known, that can only benefit Bonner."
"No public inquest again," Hertford said.
"We are interfering with the course of the law," Cranmer replied. "But we have no alternative if we are to keep this quiet."
"Where will he strike next?"
he burst out in sudden anger.
"And how was he able to get Yarrington inside the church and make this terrible display without anyone seeing?"
He looked at me. "I think the killer did the same as with Dr. Gurney and Master Elliard," I said. "Invited Yarrington to some meeting point, drugged him with Dwale, used his key to open the church and tie him up during the day, then locked the door and waited until the gathering outside had started before setting light to the fish oil he'd obtained."
"It's just as well we were there," Harsnett said. "The sight of poor Yarrington burning in the church without any apparent fuel or smoke made me think it was the devil's work. If we'd not been able to calm the congregation somewhat, I think they'd be running through the streets crying the devil had done this. Though I'm not sure they would have been wrong," he added quietly.
Hertford looked at me with a penetrating gaze.
"We have to stop him," he said. "Bonner and Gardiner are still questioning the courtiers and the Archbishop's staff that were taken last week. They've found nothing, but they will keep pressing."
"That won't be enough for the King to act against us," his brother said. "And I hear the London butchers are all saying they can't remember to whom they sold meat in Lent."
For once, Hertford nodded in agreement with Sir Thomas.
"That is true, and I think Bonner is hesitating to arrest too many people. He was booed at London Wall yesterday."
I looked at him. So they knew about that. Hertford continued,
"And the King won't be satisfied with evidence concocted out of half-truths and rumours to link you with the Radicals. He loves you more than any man."
"Hold to that, my lord."
Cranmer sighed deeply.
"That was what they said about Cromwell and Wolsey. Watch the King for me, Edward. Watch who is going in and out of the privy chamber, who's whispering in his ear."
"I will."
There was a moment's silence. "May I, my lord?" I reached across and took a blank sheet of paper from the Archbishop's desk. I had to try to make some order out of this chaos. Cranmer waved a hand in assent. I wrote quickly, the others watching in silence. Then I laid my work on the desk. They all leaned forward to see what I'd written.
Vial 1. An infected sore. Tupholm, Cotter, radical reformer turned sinner, January, killed December. Vial 2, death in salt water. Dr. Gurney, doctor, radical reformer turned moderate, February 20th. Vial 3. Death in fresh water. Roger Elliard, lawyer. Radical reformer turned moderate. March 25th. Vial 4. Death by fire. Reverend Yarrington, cleric. Radical reformer. April 3rd. Vial 5. Death in darkness and great pain. Vial 6. River dries up. Vial 7. Great earthquake.
He is speeding up, Hartford said quietly.
I think it's Goddard, Harsnett said. Dean Benson and the man Lockley are hiding something about him, I'm sure. I'll have them questioned tomorrow. We should bring them in and subject them to stiff questioning in your prison, my lord.
No, Cranmer said firmly. We are not questioning them about a religious matter. We can't just pluck people off the streets of London with the atmosphere as it is just now.
And we aren't sure it is Goddard, I said. Not yet.
What picture have you formed of him? Cranmer asked.
By all accounts, Goddard was a cold man. A good doctor, but one who didn't care about his patients. He was sensitive about a disfigurement he had. A large mole on his nose. But somehow, from what those who knew him say, I can't see him having the savage rage of this killer.
Unless he is possessed, Harsnett said.
There was silence for a moment. Then Cranmer said,
If Yarrington was still a radical reformer, he doesn't fit the pattern you've drawn.
So far as we know, I said, there may have been more to him than met the eye. We should go to his house. If Yarrington was as godly as he seems, then my idea that the killer is punishing backsliders from radicalism falls down. But if not, it narrows the field of possible victims.
Thomas Seymour grunted.
To every lapsed radical in London, how many hundreds is that?
Many, I admitted. I rubbed my arm. The stitches were pulling. Lord Hartford looked at my paper.
According to Revelation, the pouring out of the next vial will result in people gnawing their tongues in darkness, in great pain.
That could mean anything.
He stroked his long beard, frowning.
I'd still like to know how he'll dry up a river as the sixth vial is supposed to do.
Thomas Seymour said scoffingly.
Or cause a great earthquake like the seventh.
He'll find something, I said. Something that fits. Cranmer turned to Harsnett.
You have made no progress in tracing Goddard.
Not yet, my lord.
I'm inquiring of the Surrey and Kent and Sussex authorities as well. Discreetly.
The Archbishop nodded. Then he looked at me.
Matthew, you're acting for that boy in the bedlam. Yarrington's neighbour, Reverend Meaphan, is his parish priest, is he not?
Yes, he was there yesterday when young Kite got himself on top of London Wall. So was Yarrington.
Make sure that boy is kept safe, out of sight.
I will, my lord.
It seems the warden at the bedlam may have let him out deliberately to try to get rid of a problem.
He won't do so again. There's a hearing in requests tomorrow to ensure his care.
Cranmer nodded, then looked at my arm.
And you think the killer is following you? Taunting you?
Yes.
Only you?
It seems so. Barak's wife was hurt too, but I fear that's because of her connection to me. He wants me to leave the case.
Thomas Seymour laughed.
You're being over-anxious. Why should you matter to him?
I don't know, I answered. I turned to Harsnett.
Nothing has gone amiss with you?
No. Though working at Whitehall Palace, I would be harder to get at.
Cranmer drew a hand down his face.
There is nothing to do but keep on with the hunt.
See Dean Benson and the man Lockley again tomorrow.
Where does Lockley live?
Out by the Charterhouse. Sir Thomas frowned.
My lord, I've said I don't like the Lady Catherine Parr being so near to someone who may be involved somehow with these murders.
She is surrounded by servants, his brother answered with a note of weariness. And she hardly fits the pattern of his victims. A woman of quiet, sincere faith.
Nor did Yarrington, but that didn't stop him going up like a Christmas candle tonight.
My lord, Harsnett said, I think we should go to Reverend Yarrington's house now.
The church warden told me he lived in the rectory a couple of streets away from his church, alone but for his servants. I told him not to send word what has happened.
Cranmer considered a moment.
Very well. Matthew, Gregory, go now to poor Yarrington's house. Speak to his servants. Find what you can about his life. Take a couple of my guards. And if you think it worth holding any of the servants in custody, have them brought back here quietly.
Now, Matthew, before you go, I would see you alone for a minute.
The others filed out, leaving me alone with the Archbishop.
This terrible matter affects you, Matthew, does it not?
I felt tears behind my eyes. The Archbishop could have that effect. Yes, I answered.
Because your good friend was one of the victims? And because the perpetrator follows you and mocks you?
Yes. And because I've never seen such... I hesitated. Wickedness before.
It preys on me, too. I've seen many men, too many, killed for political reasons.
But this is different. I sense this man enjoys what he does.
I think that is so.
How could someone possibly do such things and believe they're carrying out God's will?
Cranmer burst out with sudden emotion.
Is it some blasphemous mockery of religion inspired directly by the devil? Gregory Harsnett believes so.
I don't know, my lord. I try not to think too hard on that.
Fire, he said quietly. It's a terrible way to die. The heretics I've pleaded with, begged with to recant, I frightened them by telling them of the skin shriveling, the fat melting, the hissing and crackling.
He closed his eyes and sighed. I would have saved them if I could, but the king is always adamant for the harshest punishments.
Once it was Catholics he thought to persecute, but he's returning more and more to the old ideas in religion. A Catholicism without the Pope.
And he gets harder to persuade each year.
He shook his head, closed his eyes for a moment, then gave me a sudden piercing look.
Can you bear this? He asked.
Yes, my lord. I have sworn to avenge my poor friend. I will hold to that. I will find courage. He smiled wryly.
Then so must I. Catherine Parr still holds out, you know. She won't give the king an answer.
She's frightened, poor woman. Hardly surprising, given it's scarce a year since Catherine Howard went to the block.
Yet I must urge her friends to persuade her to yield for the influence she could have on the king.
She will be in danger.
Yes, he nodded firmly. That is what we must all face, for the sake of Jesus' truth. He endured the worst horror of all for us.
The Archbishop sat silent a moment longer, frightened, sad, compassionate, yet implacable. Then he bade me go.
Solve this. Find him.
Barak and Harsnett were waiting for me in the corridor. Harsnett was pacing up and down, frowning.
Barak sat on a chair, one leg jigging nervously. He looked impatient, angry, frightened. Harsnett looked at me curiously.
"He wanted a few word about the murders," I said. "They disturb him."
"Does he too feel the devil's in this?"
"He doesn't know, nor do I."
"It's not a speculation that can profit us,"
I added sharply.
I turned to Barak. "Come, we're going to Yarrington's house."
We went outside where a couple of the palace guards joined us. Big men in helmets with swords at their waists, for the Archbishop's palace needed guarding as much as that of any other great man of state. We went down to the pier and took the Archbishop's barge back to town, then walked up to Yarrington's church through the city. Dark and silent now, for it was past curfew, the constables raising their lanterns in the faces of late travellers. They bowed when they saw our fine clothes and the uniformed guards.
"I was scared shitless when I saw that man burning," Barak said. "That poor bastard burning like a candle. For a minute I really thought he'd been set alight by some supernatural power."
"It was fish oil," I said briskly. "This stuff about devilry doesn't help us."
We reached the church, silent and empty now, the windows blank and dark. We walked a little way until we found a fine rectory set in a well-kept little garden. Harsnett banged loudly on the door. Flickers of light appeared at a window as someone lit a candle, and a man's voice called,
"Who is it?"
through the door in a scared voice.
"We come on Archbishop Cranmer's business," Harsnett answered.
There was the sound of bolts being drawn back, and the door opened to reveal a small, elderly fellow, his scant grey hair disordered and his nightshirt tucked hastily into his breeches. His eyes widened with fear at the sight of the guards.
"Is it the master?"
he asked.
"Oh, God, he hasn't been arrested."
"It's not that. You men stay outside," Harsnett told the guards, then walked past the old man into a little hallway,
doors and a staircase leading off. I followed.
"Are you his servant?"
"His steward, sir. Toby White. What is..."
"Why should he be arrested?" Harsnett asked sharply.
"They say Bonner will arrest all godly men,"
he answered, a little too quickly, I thought. I didn't like the steward. He had a mean look.
"Who else lives here?"
The servant hesitated then, eyes darting rapidly between me and Harsnett.
"Only the boy, and he's abed in the stable."
"I'm afraid I have bad news, Goodman White," Harsnett said. "Your master died this evening."
The old man's eyes widened.
"Died? I didn't know where he was. I was starting to worry, but... dead?"
He stared at us incredulously.
"He was murdered," Harsnett said.
The steward's eyes widened.
"When did you last see him?"
"He had a message late yesterday afternoon. A letter. He said he had to go and see a fellow cleric. He didn't say where. I thought he must have stayed overnight."
"What happened to the letter?"
"Master took it with him."
Harsnett looked at me.
"Like Dr. Gurney and your friend."
He turned back to the trembling servant.
"You knew he was going to the reopening of the church tonight?"
"Yes, sir. I thought perhaps he'd gone straight there."
Harsnett stood silent a moment, thinking. I saw the servant glance quickly at the staircase, then away again.
"Perhaps we should look over the house," I said.
"There's nobody here,"
the servant said too quickly.
"Just me."
"If your master had forbidden books," I said, "we don't care about that."
"No, but..."
Harsnett looked at him suspiciously.
"Give me that candle," he said firmly.
The old man hesitated, then handed it over.
"Stay here," Harsnett told him. "Barak, keep an eye on him."
The coroner inclined his head to me, and I followed him up the stairs. The first room we looked into was a study, well-thumbed books lying among papers and quills on a big desk. I picked one up, peering at it to try to make out the title. Institutes of the Christian Religion by John Calvin. I had heard of him, one of the most radical and uncompromising of the new generation of continental reformers. Harsnett held up a hand.
I heard something, he whispered.
He pointed across the corridor to another door, then marched across and threw it open. A shrill scream came from within. It was a bedroom, dominated by a comfortable feather bed. A woman lay there, naked. A girl, rather, for she was still in her teens, smooth-skinned and blonde-haired. She grabbed the blankets and pulled them up to her neck.
Help! She shouted. Robbers!
Quiet! Harsnett snapped. I am the king's assistant coroner. Who are you?
She stared at us with wide eyes, but didn't reply.
Are you Yarrington's whore?
There was anger in his voice. What's your name, girl? I asked quietly.
Abigail, sir. Abigail Day.
And are you the minister's woman? There's no point in lying. She reddened and nodded. Harsnett's face twisted in disgust.
You seduced a man of God?
A look of defiance came into the girl's face.
It wasn't me did the seducing.
Don't you bandy words with me. A creature like you in a minister's bed? Do you not fear for your soul? And his?
Harsnett was shouting now, his face filled with anger. I'd grown to respect and almost like the coroner these last few days, but the terrible events of the evening were bringing out another side of him, the hard, implacable man of faith. The girl made a spirited reply, her own fear turning to anger.
Keeping body and soul together's been all I've worried about since my father was hanged,
she answered fiercely.
For stealing a gentleman's purse.
There was bitter contempt in her voice.
It killed my mother.
Harsnett was unaffected.
How long have you been here?
He snapped.
4 months.
Where did Yarrington pick you up?
She hesitated before answering.
I was in a house down in Southwark, where he used to come. We get many ministers down there,
she added boldly.
They are weak men, and you tempt them to fall.
Harsnett's voice shook with anger and contempt. This was wasting time. Did you ever hear of a whore called Welsh Elizabeth? I asked her.
No, sir.
She looked from one to the other of us, frightened again.
Why, sir? Why?
Your master is dead, Harsnett said bluntly. He was murdered earlier tonight.
Abigail's mouth opened wide.
Murdered?
He nodded.
Get some clothes on. I'm taking you to the Archbishop's prison. There'll be some more questions. Nobody will miss you,
he added brutally.
And after this you'll find yourself whipped at the cart's tail as a whore if I have anything to do with it.
It's only some questions about your master, I said, as the wretched girl began to cry.
Come, pull yourself together and get dressed. We shall be downstairs.
I took Harsnett's arm and led him out. Outside, he shook his head sorrowfully.
The snares the devil sets to pull us down, he said.
Men are men, I answered impatiently, and always will be.
You are a cynic, Master Shardlake. A man of weak faith. A Laodicean.
I raised my eyebrows. That phrase comes from Revelation. Harsnett blinked, frowned, then raised a hand. I'm sorry. I'm affected by what we saw tonight.
But do you realise if Yarrington hadn't been keeping that whore, he wouldn't have died tonight? He was killed for his hypocrisy, wasn't he?
Yes, I think he was. Harsnett closed his eyes wearily, then looked at me.
Why did you ask about Welsh Elizabeth?
That was what the Cotter Tupholme's woman was called. I wondered if the killer might have got his information through a whorehouse. About the two carnal sinners punished with death, I added. It's clear now that Yarrington did fit the pattern.
Yes, he did.
Harsnett's face set hard.
I'll find out what else she was at.
Be gentle with her, please. Nothing will be served by harshness here. He grunted.
We'll see.
The steward Toby was sitting in the kitchen together with a scared-looking boy of around 10, ragged and smelling of the stables with dirty brown feet. He stared at us wide-eyed from under a mop of brown hair.
Who is this?
Harsnett asked.
Timothy, sir, the stable boy,
Toby said.
Stand up for your betters, you silly little shit.
The boy stood, his legs trembling.
Leave us, boy, Harsnett said.
The child turned and scurried out.
Well, Harsnett said sarcastically, so much for there being nobody at home.
He paid me well for keeping her presence quiet,
Toby said, his voice surly.
You connived at sin.
Everyone sins.
Who else knew? I asked.
No one.
People must have seen the girl coming in and out, I said. Toby shook his head.
He only let her go abroad after dark. It was easy enough in the winter. She didn't want to go out anyway in the snow and ice. I wondered how he'd kept her secret now the days were getting longer and spring coming. He'd probably have kicked her out soon.
He smiled sardonically, showing yellow stumps of teeth.
He had a good excuse to keep folk away. His precious copies of Luther and that new one, Calvin.
How long were you with your master?
Barrack asked.
5 years,
his eyes narrowed.
I was paid to be a loyal servant, not question my master's deeds. That's what I did.
He paused.
How did he die? Was he robbed? You can't move in London for sturdy beggars these days.
No,
Harsnett answered non-committally.
You can't.
Toby shook his head sadly. Yet I sensed he had had no great affection for his master.
So he found the girl in the stews?
I asked. Toby shrugged.
I think he went there often. Funny thing, since he brought Abigail here, you'd think he'd be happier, but he only ranted against sin more and more. Bad conscience, I suppose. Religious folk are mighty strange, they say. I just go to services as the king commands.
What about the boy? He must have known she was here.
I told him to keep his mouth shut or he'd lose his place. He wouldn't dare do anything. He's an orphan, and he'd end on the streets if he was kicked out of here. Master kept her well hidden. If the church wardens had found out, he'd have been defrocked.
We have reason to believe whoever killed him knew he had the girl here, I said. Toby sat up, alarmed.
I told you. I said nothing to anybody.
Then who else could have known? Harsnett asked. Who came here?
If he had business to conduct, he met people in the church. No one came into the house but me. I had all the cleaning of it. If I went out, I left Timothy with instructions to tell callers to come back later. He's bright enough, he knew what to do.
Harsnett got to his feet.
You were coming with me, good man White. You and the girl can spend a night in the Lollards Tower, see if you remember any more. Jacobs,
he called. One of the guards came in. Toby looked at him in fear.
I've done nothing,
he said, his voice rising.
Then you've naught to fear,
Harsnett replied, as the guard lifted the old man to his feet.
I rose. "I think I'll question the stable boy," I said. Harsnett nodded.
"Good idea."
I went out to a little yard at the side of the house. Candlelight winking through an open door led me to the stable. The boy sat there on an upturned bucket beside a straw mattress, leaning against the side of a big grey mare and stroking it. I saw a crude straw bed in one corner. He looked up, terrified, his dirty face stained with tear tracks. I felt the softening I always did when faced with lonely, unhappy children. "Are you Timothy?" I asked gently.
"Yes, sir," he whispered. "Sir, Toby says Master is dead. Did a bad man kill him?"
"I'm afraid so."
"What's happening to Master Toby?"
"He's going with the coroner. I'd like to ask you some questions."
"Yes, sir."
Soothingly as I had spoken, he still looked frightened. Hardly surprising, a group of strangers clattering in at near midnight. "You know about Abigail, the woman who lives here?" I asked. He didn't reply. "Were you told to keep it secret?" "It doesn't matter now."
"Toby said Master would beat me if I ever mentioned her name. Master did hit me once for swearing. But I wouldn't have told, sir. She was kind to me, for all Toby said she was a great sinner. Sir, what will happen to Abby? Will she be all right?"
"Not if Harsnett has his way," I thought. I took a deep breath. "You told no one about her? You'll not be punished for telling the truth?"
"No. No, I swear I didn't. On the Bible, sir, on the Bible, if you wish. I told no one about her. I liked her being here. She was kind. Sometimes this last winter she would give me pennies, let me sit by the fire indoors if Master and Toby were out. She said she knew what it was to be cold and hungry."
His eyes filled with tears again. I guessed he had had no kindness from Yarrington nor from the steward, only from the whore. I sensed there was something more, something he was keeping back in his fear. But if I told Harsnett of my opinion, the boy would be dragged with the others to the Archbishop's prison. And something within me rebelled at that. I couldn't do it.
"Master Shardlake!"
Harsnett's voice came from outside, making the boy jump. "I must go now, Timothy," I said. "But I'll come and see you tomorrow. You'll be without a place, now your master is dead. Toby said you have no family."
"No, sir," he sniffed. "I'll have to go a-begging."
"Well, I will try to find you a place. I promise I'll come again tomorrow and we'll talk more, eh? For now, close the stable door and go to sleep."
"I told the truth, sir," he said. "I told nobody about Abigail."
"Yes, I believe you."
"Did the constables catch the man who killed Master?"
"No, not yet. But they will." I left the stable. Outside, I bit my lip. What if he ran away? But he wouldn't, not with the prospect of another place. He knew something, and it would be easier to find out what it was once he had got over his initial shock.
"Master Shardlake!"
Harsnett called again impatiently from the open doorway.
"Yes, I'm coming."
"Suffer the little children," I thought bitterly. I joined Harsnett, who had gone down the street and stood looking at the church with Barrack.
"How did the killer know about Yarrington's whore?" he sighed. "I'll have the girl and that servant questioned hard, but I don't think they know anything."
"What about the boy?" "He told no one about Abigail. I said I'd come and see him again tomorrow when he's calmer. He'll be without a place now. I told him I'd try and find him one." He looked at me curiously,
Where?
I don't know yet.
I hope you can. Or if he lives, he'll grow to be another beggar starving in the streets and threatening the peace.
He shook his head.
I would they could be cared for and brought to God.
His anger seemed to have passed. My friend Roger was starting up a subscription among the lawyers for a poor men's hospital.
Good, he said. That's needed. Preachers, too.
The beggars are utterly devoid of the fear of God. I've seen that in my work. They are outcasts.
So were our Lord and his disciples, but they had faith.
They thought a better world was about to come.
It will,
he said quietly. He smiled at me.
I'm sorry for my anger earlier. You'll still come to dinner tomorrow?
Of course. I wonder if Yarrington had any family.
I'll find out from the servants.
He turned as the guards appeared in the doorway. Abigail and Toby slumped between them, looking terrified.
I must go with them.
Harsnett bowed quickly and walked away.
I don't envy them, Barrack said, as the two were led away.